from ABC News, World News, This Week. I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen.
I think the United States, in the end, after some time, took the right policy in not negotiating with my captors.
I really felt like I could trust him. He seemed to be an intelligent man, a likable man.
He doesn't need an extra political target that folks would be shooting at, and I think it's best for the president that I move on.
I am elated to say we got guilty verdicts. Yay!
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
Hi, everyone. This is Alex Trebek. Do you miss reading memorable writing from print magazines because of blindness or other handicap? If so, Choice Magazine Listening, a service of the nonprofit Lucerna Fund, will send you special speed cassettes with 8 hours of unabridged selections from your favorite magazines, 6 times yearly, completely free of charge. Yes, that's right. It's free, and it includes the writings of such authors as John McPhee, Margaret Atwood, Russell Baker, Bill Moyers, Garrison Keillor, and many others. So if you're blind or unable to read regular print, or you know someone with this problem, write Listening, Box 10, Port Washington, New York, 11050. We'll also tell you how to get the special 4-track cassette player, provided free by the Library of Congress as part of its Talking Book program. Write Listening, Box 10, Port Washington, New York, 11050, or call 516-883-8280. Thank you.
Without a question of doubt, it'll be the best Christmas present probably ever. It's a long time in coming.
Tom Cicipio had just gotten word that his brother, Joseph, was being freed by the pro-Iranian kidnappers who had held him captive since September of 1986.
I'm happy it's over. I'd like to put it all behind me, and I would like to get going to the next day as my first new day of my new life.
And Joseph Cicipio has a lot of catching up to do.
I've been 5 years without any newspapers, television, magazines, or what have you, so I don't know what news has been out there for the last 5 years, so I have to learn everything over again.
Cicipio was flown to the U.S. military hospital in Wiesbaden, Germany, where Colonel Uwe Fullmeister said that the former hostage suffered after effects of being knocked unconscious and of being chained outside in the cold.
He was unsteady, dizzy, and unable to walk for several weeks after this injury, and since that time has had occasional lightheaded spells. He also developed frostbite on his hands and feet during the winters of 1986 and 1990, and because of that has had persistent skin problems due to that injury.
Cicipio had been told by his captors that the two remaining American hostages would be soon freed, and they were. Just a day after Cicipio's release, Alan Steen became a free man.
Great to be out. I don't think I can find words right now to express all that I feel. Except that it's wonderful. I mean, 5 years is no fun.
His brother Craig says Steen will also have some catching up to do.
He has two married daughters, which he doesn't know about now. And he's also a grandfather twice over from each daughter that I'm sure he doesn't know now. And another one on the way, which I'm sure he doesn't know now.
Steen also was beaten during his captivity. He suffered an injury to his brain when he was forced to do deep knee bends.
I sort of looked over my shoulder to see what the others were doing, and they had stopped and were looking at me doing deep knee bends. And I turned my attention back to the captor, and he kicked me right on the diaphragm. I fell back. I hit my head on a wooden chair, perhaps the back of a chair, and then the back of my head on a concrete floor.
Despite that, his wife Virginia says they'd like to go back to Beirut, where Steen taught at the university.
I'd love to. I know Alan, too, would love to go back. And, you know, because we were there trying to help our students, nothing else. And he loves his teaching and the students there. Now we have, though, to kind of catch up and get together with the family again. There's a lot of other priorities right now, too.
The longest held of all the Americans was Terry Anderson.
It's an honor I would gladly have given up a long time ago.
Anderson, the bureau chief for the Associated Press, was kidnapped in March of 1985. And it was the AP who paid all of Peggy Say's expenses as she worked tirelessly to free her brother.
Great to have a sister like that. You get yourself in trouble, then she just comes along and gets you out.
And Anderson acknowledged the efforts of others.
The thousands and thousands of people whom I don't know, never met, don't know me, whom I know have been working and praying for us all, for all the hostages. Your support, your prayers were important. They made a big difference. They made a difference to us in some very dark times.
As for U.S. policy during the hostage crisis?
I think the United States, in the end, after some time, took the right policy in not negotiating with my captors.
Three hostages were killed while in captivity. Two of them, William Buckley and Colonel William Higgins, were Americans. And President Bush says,
I'd like to see the returns of Colonel Higgins, who was serving under the U.N. banner, returned. I think of Mr. Buckley. I'd like to see his remains returned. And so the chapter, this ugly chapter, albeit nearly closed, is not closed.
Neither is the banner closed for U.N. Secretary General Javier Perez de Cuellar, who has been instrumental in gaining the release of the hostages.
I have closed the American chapter. I have closed the British chapter, and now I have the German chapter, the Israeli chapter, and then the Lebanese chapter.
ABC's Gordon Robison tells us that is the sentiment being expressed in the Arab press.
Newspapers here in the United Arab Emirates have welcomed Terry Anderson's release, but called on the world not to forget the prisoners still held by Israel in Lebanon. They said there will not be peace in the region until both this problem and the broader Israeli-Arab dispute are resolved.
Among the Arabs held by Israel is the Muslim cleric Sheikh Obaid. And Israel's chief hostage negotiator, Uri Lubrani, makes it plain that he is the key to further releases.
Sheikh Obaid will be released when all our prisoners will be released, particularly Ron Arad.
Arad is one of the Israeli servicemen reported missing and the only one believed to be alive. ABC's Charles Glass was held hostage for a month back in 1987, and now with all the Americans free, Glass thinks U.S.-Iranian relations could enter a new phase.
I think what we'll see is a gradual improvement in American-Iranian relations, with both sides having to forget the past and trying to build on the future, and ultimately, perhaps next year or the following year, to reopen diplomatic relations.
The U.S. has been trying to get Israel, her Arab neighbors, and the Palestinians to work toward a lasting peace. But efforts had been stalled since October's conference in Madrid. All sides were supposed to get together in Washington last Wednesday, but as ABC's John Bascom reported,
another delay for the already stalled peace talks. Arabs showed up on the 4th. Israel didn't want to talk. Israel said they'd be ready on the 9th. Now the Palestinians say that's no good. Spokeswoman Hana Nashwari says December 9th is a very solemn occasion for Palestinians.
So we will not start business as usual when all our people in the occupied territories and elsewhere are remembering our death and are commemorating the beginning of the Intifada.
The Palestinians have asked the United States to set a new date as soon as possible. John Bascom, ABC News, Washington.
In the Soviet Union, there's been another free election, and it has resulted in yet another break from the central government in Moscow. The people of Ukraine have voted for independence, and they've elected a former Communist Party official, Leonid Kravchuk, as their president. In Ukraine's capital of Kiev, ABC's John Donvan says the break does not bode well for the Kremlin.
It will bring to an end a period of rule by Moscow that began centuries ago. Europe gets a new nation of 52 million people, while the Soviet Empire loses one of its major industrial centers and a major producer of food.
The neighboring Republic of Russia has recognized Ukraine's independence, and countries outside the Soviet Union indicate that they will follow suit. White House News Secretary Marlon Fitzwater says the U.S. is one of them.
The United States looks forward to the kind of normal relationship with Ukraine that one would expect it to have with a democratizing country.
Ukraine's new president says he intends to carry out radical economic reform, turning industry over to private ownership, selling off state property, and encouraging foreign investment. There was another indication of how bad the Soviet economy is. The government has cut all funding for Olympic training camps, leaving in doubt whether or not the Soviets will compete in next year's Summer Games in Barcelona. Much attention was focused on a small courtroom in West Palm Beach, Florida, where the trial of William Smith got underway. A woman has accused Smith of raping her last March at the Kennedy family estate, and the alleged victim provided the most dramatic testimony of the trial thus far. Here, she is questioned by prosecutor Maura Lash about her impressions of Smith the night she met him and his uncle, Senator Edward Kennedy, at a local bar.
I really felt like I could trust him. He seemed to be an intelligent man, a likable man. We were carrying on a conversation that had, to me, no fearful attitudes. He seemed to be a nice and intelligent man.
Her composure disintegrated when she was asked to provide details of the alleged attack.
I was yelling, no, stop. And I tried to arch my back to get him off of me, and he slammed me back into the ground, and I got... And then he pushed my dress up. And he raped me.
Smith spoke briefly with reporters outside the courtroom.
Obviously, we saw some very sad and some very dramatic testimony today. But I've been living with these allegations, with this damnable lie, for the last 8 months. And I hope everybody will be patient, as I have been, and allow me the opportunity, with Roy's help, to defend myself in the coming days.
The Roy Smith referred to is his lawyer, Roy Black, who brought the woman to tears when cross-examining her about the graphic details of the alleged rape.
Why do you have to ask me questions like that?
Would you like to have a recess? I need to ask you some questions about this. You're on a request that we have a recess.
No, I will get through this. This has been a nightmare for me. I want this over.
You're on a request that we have a recess.
Following the recess, the cross-examination resumed. ABC's Catherine Cowdery sums it up for us.
Jane Doe left the jury with a powerful statement aimed at defense attorney Roy Black.
Your client raped me.
Those were her last words as she left the courtroom. The alleged victim was on the stand for a day and a half and endured 5.5 hours of cross-examination by Roy Black. She never wavered from her basic story as Black challenged her version of events.
The case has drawn international attention because of the Kennedy name and the prospects that the senator would testify. When he took the stand, he was asked by Prosecutor Lash about the night in question.
Did you hear anything at all that night at the Kennedy estate?
No, I did not.
Did you hear any screams?
No, I did not.
Did you hear any noises at all within the house itself?
No, I did not.
The senator's son, Patrick, also testified and offered a substantially different account of events from the woman's, setting the stage for Smith's testimony when the defense presents its case. When David Duke lost the race for governor of Louisiana last month, people wondered if he'd take his campaign to the national level. We got the answer last Wednesday.
We've investigated and looked at Republican primaries across this country, and I have decided, and I formally announce today, that I will be a candidate for President of the United States in every primary that we can be placed on the ballot over the next few weeks.
What kind of threat will the former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan be to President Bush? ABC's political director, Hal Bruno.
Duke is not going to threaten President Bush's renomination, but he will have a tremendous negative impact on the campaign. He's going to push racial issues to the forefront and stir up tension every place he goes. Using issues like civil rights and taxes, welfare, immigration, and trade, he's going to pull some votes and might even pick up some Republican delegates, even though the party has disowned him. At the very least, he's going to cause a lot of turmoil.
There was turmoil within the White House ranks as President Bush's chief of staff, John Sununu, resigned. Sununu has been under fire for months for various political transgressions.
I knew the rules of the game when I came to town. I had always told him that if I could serve him best by being in the job, I wanted to be in the job. And if I became a political burden, I'd be willing to leave. And he's going into a campaign. He doesn't need an extra political target that folks would be shooting at. And I think it's best for the president that I move on.
Moving into his job is the current transportation secretary, Samuel Skinner.
Sam Skinner takes over as a firm right hand at the time when the nation's economy presents a difficult challenge. Economic growth is sluggish at best. And yes, people are out of work, and we need to get this country back on its feet, people back on the job.
Increasing numbers of Americans are without jobs these days. Last month's unemployment rate of 6.8% was the same as October's, but as Bruce Steinberg of Merrill Lynch says, that's only because many people gave up looking for work.
241,000 jobs were destroyed in November.
that is comparable to what was going on in February and March, which were really at the very bottom of the recession when the economy was contracting very rapidly. Looking at these numbers, one can only say that the recession continues. It's now in its 17th month. It's the longest recession we've had since the 1930s.
The Federal Reserve seems to have stepped in to force interest rates lower by cutting its federal funds rate. That in itself does not greatly affect consumers, but if the Fed were to cut its discount rate, that might produce another drop in the prime interest rate charged by banks. And there's where consumers would benefit. That action by the Fed to spur the economy comes too late for 100 employees of Pan American Airways. Their jobs disappeared when Pan Am went out of business.
Pan American World Airways is a wonderful airline. And it's just very, very, very sad.
Agnes Bowles and her fellow employees lost their jobs because Pan Am's financing arrangements with Delta Airlines fell through. Pan Am has been in Chapter 11 since last January. Also filing for Chapter 11 protection from its creditors, one of the country's oldest and largest newspapers, the New York Daily News. This following similar action by its owner, the publishing empire owned by the Maxwell family of London. The Daily News has had a series of financial problems over recent years, and one of its columnists, Bill Bell, says...
Sure, it'll survive. It's survived already more crises than a South Bronx alley cat, and it has more lives to come than you'd ever imagine.
The Daily News publisher, Kevin Maxwell, says survival will depend on cutting costs even more, which will almost certainly mean concessions from its unions. Just this past week, it was revealed that the Maxwell family business is in such bad shape that some of its pension funds have been siphoned off to prop it up. But is Bobby Bonilla worried about his future?
It's great. I mean, it's a lot of it's very exciting. I mean, I can't really explain it.
Bonilla's one of those right place at the right time guys. He's no superstar, but the New York Mets have made him the highest paid baseball player in history, with a 5-year, $29 million contract. A name that made headlines in 1966 was that of Richard Speck. Some of you might remember the drifter who stabbed 8 student nurses to death in Chicago. Speck, who's been in prison since then, has died of an apparent heart attack. Otto Kreuzer was the chief of detectives in Chicago at the time.
The wheels of justice grind slowly, but they grind exceedingly fine. It is no great loss to society that Richard passed to the unknown.
Richard Speck was 49. And you may remember the story of Anthony Riggs, who served in Operation Desert Storm. Here's ABC's Rod Hansen.
Anthony Riggs survived the perils of the Persian Gulf War, only to be gunned down on the streets of Detroit. But it was not a random killing. Today, a jury finding his 20-year-old brother-in-law, Michael Cato, guilty of the ambush laying. Prosecutors say the killing was part of a conspiracy between Riggs' wife and her brother to collect some $175,000 in insurance money. Murder charges against her were dismissed because of a legal technicality. The dead soldier's mother sat through the entire trial and says justice has prevailed.
I know that Jesus does answer prayer.
Prosecutors still hope to bring the widow to trial on a first-degree murder charge. Rod Hansen, ABC News, Detroit.
There was a verdict in the Charles Keating case. Keating had come to personify the problems that ravaged the nation's savings and loan industry during the late 1980s and was charged with fraud in connection with the collapse of his failed Lincoln SNL of Irvine, California. Many people lost a lot of money investing in his junk bonds, and some of them were outside the courtroom in Los Angeles when the verdict came.
I am elated to say we got guilty verdicts. Yay! We want to say yay inside, but we didn't dare. We were afraid we'd be evicted. Justice finally prevailed.
Keating faces 10 years in prison and $250,000 fine.
I firmly believe in myself, my family, my friends, and I very much believe in my counsel. I look forward to the future, unafraid and assured that justice will be done.
Keating's lawyer plans an appeal. All but lost in the excitement of this past week's hostage release and Smith trial was the safe return to Earth of the shuttle Atlantis.
We'll stop, Houston.
Roger, we'll stop. Good job, Fred. Welcome home, Atlantis, and congratulations on a great flight.
More on the last shuttle flight of the year from ABC's Jim Slade.
Atlantis touched down on time and on the center line of the runway. In fact, it touched down so efficiently that spacecraft commander Fred Gregory had to help it stop. The shuttle rolled on its own farther down the runway than engineers expected in a test of the runway system at Edwards. The fact that they could concentrate on something that small is an indication of how smooth the operation went for the astronauts. The landing 3 days early was done as a precaution because a key navigation instrument failed, cutting their safety margin in orbit. The main objective of the flight was accomplished on the first day, with launch of a $300 million missile warning satellite for the Air Force. Jim Slade, ABC News, Washington.